Hola, cage fighting connoisseurs. This is KidNativeBloodyElbow.com, joined by Zane Simon. A brutal night of upsets tonight at UFC 185. Anthony Showtime Pettis lost his title. Rafael dos Anjos, the new champion, and Joanna Champion, or Joanna Indichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichichich
gift. Let's
she
use it.
She has. Let's take it. Joanna Champion, the first Polish champion in UFC history. Can you take a crack at saying the lady's last name correctly?
It's Janjicic.
Janjicic. That's not too hard. Joanna Janjicic. I had it down during the fight, but as soon as the fight was over and Rogan and Goldberg weren't saying anymore, I completely lost it. But let's get back to Pettis. Rafael Dos Anjos completely obliterated him for 5 rounds, 50-45, 50-45, 50-45, unanimous decision win, definitive domination. Zane Simon, talk about the fight.
Yeah, I cannot believe that, quite frankly. I mean, I don't know, you know, Pettis said that he couldn't see from the first punch that Dos Anjos hit him with. That would make sense.
That will hamper your fistic abilities, I'm told.
Yeah, and then he also watched his little brother get his ass beat just a little while before. Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe
he's seen his brother lose before, though, and didn't seem to be affected.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just that Dos Anjos is just that much better, and this was just the right matchup. I mean,
it's Gilbert a stylistic wanted matchup that definitely benefits RDA. I mean,
Melendez laid the plan, and Dos Anjos just followed it perfectly. And it's just amazing that Dos Anjos, I mean, this is a guy who started fighting 11, 12 years ago. It's really amazing that he's winning the title now.
It really is a remarkable late career resurgence by RDA. He's been on a hot streak, though. He demolished Nate Diaz, and of course, after the fight, there was rumors that Diaz came into the fight with a broken rib. He certainly looked deflated and diminished, but maybe RDA is just that good. I mean, maybe it's time to take our hat off to the champion and recognize the man is a kick-ass mixed martial artist.
Yeah, he's doing everything right everywhere. He was always a good wrestler and grappler, and he's become an amazing striker. I mean, he demolished Henderson. That was really, like, the feather in his cap heading into this bout. And then, yeah, Pettis, he just outworked him everywhere. Didn't stay on the outside. When he did, he punished Pettis to the body with kicks constantly, and then just made Pettis fight a firefight the whole way through, and that's where Pettis is bad. I mean, that's just where he's not great, is right in the pocket, trading punches, and Dos Anjos was able to just stick with him and force him to fight that fight all night.
And he's even worse with his back up against the cage, taking a beating, and worse than that, on his back, completely, basically just hapless. I mean, he's got a very poor sweep game. He's not going to get a submission on RDA. And he had nothing for him on the ground. Nothing.
Yeah. He never got close to anything.
Did you see the tweet from Khabib Nurmagomedov right during the, I don't know, third or fourth round of the title fight?
Was that about partying? Or was?
Yes. If you want to be a champion, guys, don't go to parties. Go to the gym. I mean, that is a bitchy call out, I got to say. That. That is some meanness there. And Nurmagomedov, as Rogan and Goldberg were saying, has to be licking his chops because he's already shown what he can do to RDA. Talk about a stylistic mismatch.
Yeah, I mean, Nurmagomedov may be the future. He may be the king in waiting at this point. That may be what we're seeing here, because RDA, much like this fight, RDA had, he was able to outstrike Nurmagomedov on the feet, but he wasn't able to stay there for any length of time.
Nope, not at all. And so, but he's got to get through Donald the Cowboy Cerrone, which is a very different stylistic challenge.
Yeah, I think that fight's probably even better for Nurmagomedov. I think
that's true.
The biggest, I don't know. I mean,
trying to get some drama going here, Zane, and you're fucking it all up.
We've just seen that anything can happen. I mean, we just saw it.
I know. I meant to razz you on Dallas's behalf over the Sergio Pettis blasting, because you were mocking him for picking Benoit as a, whatever you say his name, Benoit. How does this dude say his name?
It's Benoit. He's from Texas, so
yeah, he says it Benoit,
like
which
would
is
pronounce it.
yes, and that totally throws me. But you mocked Dallas for saying this was that was an underdog to look at.
Did I?
You were pretty dismissive. I have to say, I was recording the show for a backup.
Okay, that could be. You know what? The thing is watching that fight, like, Pettis did everything right, and he was beating Benoit all the way through. Like, every exchange he was winning, every moment of the fight, every part of it he was winning. But he has this thing where he just checks out. Like, he just took a left hand...
I mean, a left hook right to the jaw. I mean, you know, if he had pulled his hand back up a little bit higher, maybe he could have blocked it or deflected it, and maybe his chin's just not that good.
I think it's just his chin's not that good, or something in his psyche is not there that makes his chin bad, because he, in every fight, like, it's not a stylistic thing. Technically, he's a very sound fighter. But he just has these moments where, you know, it's just like the punch is coming and he's not looking for it at all. Mm-hmm. And it's almost
and he can't take it when it comes.
Yeah, it's almost Overeem-esque. And that, like, even when he's doing everything right, it's so close to being wrong.
Yeah, so bad night for the Team Rufus and bad night for the Pettis brothers, both of them losing. But let's talk about the women's strawweight fight. Carla Esparza came in a heavy favorite, lost badly. I mean, badly. By the time it was clear she wasn't going to be able to dominate Joanna Champion on the ground, she was done. It reminded me of Mark Coleman, Maurice Smith back in the day.
It was an ass beating. It was more like that second fight between Anderson Silva and Chael Sonnen, when Silva really felt like he had something to prove to Sonnen.
And Sonnen, like, made a really dumbass decision to throw a spinning elbow at Anderson Silva.
Yeah. It was just this. I mean, that's the thing. I kept seeing it that, and I doubted it. I picked Esparza. I figured that her persistence would get her there. But Champion, Champion's takedown defense is so, so technically sound, like,
yeah,
amazingly sound. And Esparza has not beaten a good wrestler. She never has. She's never, every time she's faced one, she's lost.
And lost badly. And I think Indrajec could be Champion for a while, because in that division, if you've got excellent stand-up and really good takedown defense, what's to stop you?
Yeah, I mean, she's one of the only women outside of really Cyborg that changes fights with her striking. Like, just her ability to strike can make her opponents worse. She hits you, you get a little worse. She hits you again, you get a little worse. There are very, very few women in the sport that have that kind of ability.
Yeah, and the fact that she's Polish is a real silver lining in a night that was otherwise pretty bad for the UFC's bottom line, because Pettis is somebody, he hadn't blossomed yet, but he was had the potential to emerge as a superstar. Maybe he still does. I think the shine's been taken off of him pretty seriously. Nobody's going to be calling for a rematch of this fight.
No.
He's going to have to claw his way back in the title. So, you know, Pettis is a stillborn star. Rafael Dos Anjos gives him another Brazilian champion. It'll remain to be seen if he can click with the Brazilian fans. You know, Jose Aldo hasn't necessarily done that. Anderson Silva did. So, you know, on the one hand, they need a Brazilian champion. The Brazilians have lost a lot of titles, so that's good, but I don't think it's quite worth the trade-off of losing somebody in Pettis who's potentially a very, very exciting, very dynamic American champion. But Indrajec, as the first Polish champion, just as the UFC is heading to Poland for the first time, that could be a very nice little thing for them, because the women's strawweight division, frankly, they're not going to be headlining any pay-per-views anytime soon. So this is basically found money for the UFC.
Yeah, I mean, everybody who sees Indrajec fight likes her, like, likes to watch her. Like, she's fun. She gets a lot of people on her side. You know, she gave Esparza that cookie at the weigh-ins and then told her that it didn't have any drugs in it. Like, you know, she knows what she's doing, and she talks a good game. And the amazing thing to me is, too, you know, we're talking about somebody who started fighting as a, in MMA as a pro in 2012. So, yeah.
Well, that just tells you where women's MMA is right now, and it's very much where men's MMA was not just 10 years ago, but more like 15 years ago.
Well, it I mean, it's also a testament to how technically pure she is. Everything she does right. It's really remarkable. Like, you know, when she's defending a takedown, she's not just sprawling. She gets to the side. She redirects. She limp legs. She has all these techniques that you have to put together to have a really capable, like, counter-wrestling game. And because Esparza, she's, you know, on the other side of that. When she gets on a double leg, she's constantly switching angles. She's constantly switching grips. She's going to singles. She does all the things right to, that you need to do to wrestle somebody to the ground. And Janjacek was just there all the way ahead of her every step of the way, and that's just amazing.
Yeah, really amazing, and we'll be excited to see. I think she's going to dominate the division for a little while. Rafael Dos Anjos, I don't see that. I see Nurmagomedov beating him in their first meeting. But let's talk about the rest of the main card. Johnny Hendricks utterly dominated Matt Brown. Maybe for the first 30 seconds I thought Matt Brown might have a chance, but once Hendricks got him down, that was pretty much the fight. That was just Hendricks takedown repeat.
Yeah, Hendricks had, I mean, Hendricks followed the perfect game plan to beat Matt Brown, which is to hit him hard coming in and then don't stay in. You know, he'd hit him hard, come in, hit the takedown. Like, he wouldn't sit there in the clinch and try, and the couple times he did, Matt Brown worked him over. Like, Matt Brown made it very clear very quickly that when they were in the middle of the cage and Hendricks tried to clinch up with him, that Brown was going to really make him pay for that. So Hendricks came in, hit a couple of big shots to get make Matt Brown reset, and then went right to the takedowns, right to the ground work, right to, you know, wearing him down, keeping him down, and just rinse and repeat. It's just too bad that Hendricks isn't really a great ground and pound fighter because he didn't really have any way to to punish Brown when he was.
No, he didn't. In the first round, Brown did an excellent job of defense, breaking down Hendricks' posture, but from the second round on, he was too tired, and Hendricks still really couldn't do more than land maybe one shot at a time, never put together the kind of flurries on the ground that you really need to really bust somebody up. But let's talk about heavyweight Alistair Overeem dominating Roy Nelson. However, I was pretty shocked that Overeem got all three rounds and all three cards when Nelson got the only knockdown, and in the second round got the second biggest punch of the fight.
Yeah, I thought I could have seen giving Nelson the third. That one, I think, maybe he deserved. He had the only, like, he had the most significant offense in that round. But at the same time, a lot of the shots that Overeem was hitting Nelson with were totally unanswered, and a lot of them were really big, powerful shots, especially the knees to the body that were just constant all night.
There was elements of battery there for sure. Overeem put on a good performance, really cautious game plan, but very smart, but still aggressive, scored a lot of points. And yet, I don't know, when you see a guy's head flying to the side and his mouthpiece flying away, and then the next round you see him get dropped on his ass, you'd think at least one judge would have a round for Roy Nelson. But
yeah, I mean, I think just more than anything, it's good to see that game plan out of Overeem. If he's gonna keep fighting a guy who's been knocked out as many times as he has, it's really good to see him fighting with, like, his head pulled back, keeping offline, darting in and out, not spending a lot of time trading in the pocket, really fighting like a guy who knows I'm not going to take a lot of shots to my head if I can help it, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely, and it gives you hope, because Roy Nelson was somebody I had given up any hope of him ever making a title run. Alistair Overeem still teases me with that prospect, as remote as it may be.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. That sequence, it was right at the end of, I want to say maybe the first or the second round, where Nelson had Overeem right on the fence, and Overeem had, like, one arm up like this, and that totally nullified all of Nelson's offense. He was just like, he didn't have the big right hook to land because his left, Overeem's left arm was there. And Nelson just, like, he kept looking at it, thought about the left, just decided to shoot for a takedown instead. Like,
yeah.
If I can't throw a big overhand left or an overhand, big overhand right, it's not worth producing any offense at all. It was kind of remarkable.
It was a very telling moment. But the opening fight of the pay-per-view, flyweight Henry Cejudo, the former U.S. Olympic gold medal wrestler, utterly dominated Chris Carriazo, which really, honestly, Cejudo making weight was the bigger nerve-wracking point than beating Chris Carriazo.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like, I think Cejudo is going to be one of those guys who, the better he does and the more momentum he gets, the less likely he is to come in prepared. And
really, I was kind of thinking maybe he could put together a positive streak and build on that.
I think, like, he can't. The other part of that, though, is that even unprepared, I think Cejudo wins 2 out of every 3 fights in the UFC. Like, he has that much natural talent.
And wrestling skill.
Yeah. He just, so much athleticism, so much wrestling skill. He's an aggressive kickboxer that believes in his kickboxing. Like, he comes forward throwing really hard shots with the faith that he's going to hurt you. And that's really good to see for his development. It means that he's much more likely to continue to develop as a good, strong kickboxer. And all the tools are there. And I can't, he's going to be successful in the UFC no matter what. But I do wonder, like, I think my worry is that the closer he gets to just running guys over consistently, the more likely he might be to fall back on the idea of, like, well, I don't have to work. I mean, it's sort of like the classic Rampage thing, you know?
Yep. Or what Nurmagomedov was saying about Anthony Pettis.
Yeah.
So, although I have no knowledge if there's any, if Pettis was out of control or anything like that. But it's a good shot, though, from a contender and possibly future champion. But let's run through the FX prelim card. Ross Pearson knocked out Sam Stout. A real treat for me, especially since Sam Stout showed up in cornrows. I was really enjoying seeing Ross Pearson put a stop to that foolishness.
I'll need to catch up on the FX card. I missed the FX card, but the idea of Sam Stout in cornrows is absolutely something I got to show.
And they weren't just cornrows; they were half-ass cornrows.
Oh man!
It was. I don't know what he was thinking, but it was awful. It was a good fight, though. Good back and forth. It was everything that the Sean Shelby would have wanted when he booked that fight, because it was a good stand-up fight. Lots of action, lots of trades, and I just think Sam Stout is a little bit of a punch card. And Ross Pearson still has some fire in his belly, dominated through and finished him in the second round. Then middleweight Elias Teodoro totally dominated Roger Narvaez, at least in the second round. The first round was a little bit more back and forth, but Teodoro won that one easily. And then Benil Dariush beat Darren Cruikshank. Really impressive performance by Dariush. Cruikshank missed weight, so that you always wonder if somebody's hurt or off their feet or whatever, but Dariush looked really good against Cruikshank. Outstruck, and Cruikshank was going for the takedowns. Not a good look for the Detroit superstar, and Dariush made him pay when he tried to make it a ground fight by submitting him in the second round. And then heavyweight Jared Rosholt finished Josh Copeland in the third round of a very painful and tedious slow fight between two lumbering jigglers in the heavyweight division. I mean, these guys are tubby, and it was not pretty to watch. And then the fight pass force of the card, of course, we had Ryan Benoit pace Sergio Pettis in what had been a one-sided fight for Pettis. Joseph Duffy, the only guy to ever beat Conor McGregor, fought at lightweight against Jake Lindsey. Looked very good with a quick high kick.
Yeah, that was a nice showcase fight for Duffy. Real nice.
Yeah, and so it will be very interesting to see him in the featherweight division. I don't think he'll never have the charisma of Conor McGregor. And really, if McGregor loses to Jose Aldo, at least gives there's a second act possibly with a rematch with Joseph Duffy ahead of McGregor. And maybe
McGregor's the kind of Sonnen-esque guy that, like, he'll get big fights, you know? He's not going away, win or lose.
No. But there won't, I don't know. He'll have fun and do things, but doing things that have a point or a meaning.
No, like Sonnen, he'll have like 5 acts. Sonnen did a lot when he had no business doing it.
It's
like,
true. Getting into a title fight with Jon Jones, probably the most remarkable achievement of his mouth. And then in the opening fight, women's bantamweight, Jermaine Durandamy just pasted Larissa Pacheco. It looked like another one of these women's fight where the greener striker, at the point when they realized they weren't going to get a takedown, it became just a completely one-sided beating, much like the Esparza fight. I mean, it's kind of disturbing, honestly, to see these gals that just have nothing on the feet.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, like, I don't know. There are points where the UFC's development system fails, and I think the women's bantamweight division is going to be a division that is consistently going to be kind of dumb luck for a while. Because I think, you know, there's a very, like, record system that they look at when they're bringing somebody in, like, okay, how many people have they beaten? How good is their opposition? What organization are they coming through? What trainers do they know? And stuff like that. And so Pacheco, she was coming through an organization that the UFC is really familiar with. I believe she was coming through Jungle Fight, yeah. And she'd beaten Irene Aldana, who's one of the better prospects out there. And she's big and she's aggressive, but she trains at a nothing camp, and she really hasn't developed any of her tools around being big and aggressive. And at some point in the UFC, like, that just doesn't carry you at all.
You run into a very hard wall called a skilled athlete that will just fuck you up.
Because, I mean, to Miranda, the whole fight, she was basically slipping to the same side, throwing a big counter right. It was like, slip to the same side, left big right behind it. Slip to the same side, left big right behind it. And Pacheco just walked into it every single time.
Yeah, showed no inkling of an ability to adjust. You know, she wasn't even trying to adjust. She didn't know what was happening, and the bad coaching really showed there. You know, so, but back to the top of the card. Anthony Pettis completely smoked by Rafael Dos Anjos right from the beginning, just like Pettis said after the fight. I mean, the very first punch, whether half-blinded Pettis or not, was very clearly a sharp, hard, and sweet straight jab, if I recall correctly. It was a real nice straight punch, and just dominated him from there. I mean, Pettis was never – he landed a couple of high kicks. Dos Anjos just walked right through him, and that's all she wrote for Showtime Pettis.
Yeah, it's one of these things. He's such an amazing athlete, and he has been able to bank on that so much. But, I mean, that can be the danger, too, of being such an amazing athlete and banking on your athletic ability, is that when you do get injured in that way, that, like, suddenly you've taken away a major point of your depth perception, a major point of your ability, you know, to be in the fight, or to use your athleticism, then it comes down to suddenly much more of a skill game. Now you have to be the better wrestler, you have to be the better grappler, you have to be the better inside striker, the better guy who's going to be up against the cage and control that part of the fight, and he wasn't. And that, you know, that's kind of...
It's a bad spot for Pettis, and he's stylistically similar to probably Anderson Silva of the Great Champions, and Silva, you know, was somebody who had great stand-up game, not so great wrestling game, so-so jiu-jitsu game, and also not a great sweep artist, the guy who's going to get a submission, best case, off his back, and that's Pettis. He can get some submissions off his back, but you rarely see him pulling off sweet sweeps, and he doesn't have the constant, I'm going to stand up kind of game. That's really the more modern game off your back, is just get off your back. And so, stylistically, that's one of it's like the second lowest percentage style in MMA. The only thing worse would be to be a pure submission fighter.
Yeah, I can't say anything to that. You know, I don't know that I agree with that at all. I don't know that it's the second lowest percentage. I mean, I think, yeah, grapplers that can't wrestle and strike are certainly rock bottom.
I mean, wrestlers who have no other game are probably worse off than strikers with a little bit of jiu-jitsu. But if you know, it's the Carlos Condit quandary.
And well, still I don't got think Carlos you can Condit get to a title shot. That's the thing. I mean,
it's true. I mean, Pettis is a champion. It's not an unwinnable style, but you have to be. I mean, Pettis is an incredible athlete. And so, you know, sometimes you'll see, and not necessarily, if you've got really one of the top styles in MMA, you can go a lot further off less athleticism. That's all I'm trying to say.
It's true. I mean, you look at like what Frankie Edgar is doing now late in his career with his like super high-pressure wrestle ground-and-pound style, and like that's a style that's going to carry him.
That's a high-percentage style. That's all I'm trying to say. And Pettis has somewhat of a low-percentage style. Dos Anjos, once he matched him striking, Pettis had nowhere to go. I mean, he wasn't going to out-wrestle him. He wasn't going to out-grapple him. So it completely changed the fight. And I don't know, you know, I mean, maybe the being blinded in one eye is an excuse. Maybe it's not. You know, who knows if that's exact. I mean, there's no reason to doubt the guy if he says he's blind. He told his corner between rounds, between the fourth and fifth. What do you think of Duke Rufus just passing by. I mean, technically, it's the coach's duty to say, hey, my guy can't see out of an eye, stop the fight.
Yeah, it's one of those things
where Pettis would have killed him if he did that. I mean, everybody would say, what a chicken shit thing to do.
Yeah, it's one of those things I can't muster up any enthusiasm for is the thing. Like, it's wrong, it's stupid, but it's become such a part of our sport. Like, Duke Rufus would be breaking the mold so heavily if he was like, whoa, I'm really concerned about your health out there. Let's stop this fight. Like, I mean, yeah. We saw Ron Potts' corner when he was just, like, done on the stool. Not even, like, I can't see, but, like, I can't fight anymore. Like, I don't want to do this. I'm finished. And they're like, nah, you're not. Go out there. And this is Ron Potts in a heavyweight bout.
Yes, yeah, a no-stakes bout, no reason to risk trauma. But Pettis is in there, a champion, a lot on the line, and very capable of coming back to win the fight in a split second. So
I don't know. It would have been
coaching malpractice of the first water for Rufus to do that. But at the same time, I mean, it's just such a nitpicking, by the book sort of thing to do, that you just don't see anybody who's going to become an MMA coach doing it.
Yeah.
You know. So anyway, any final thoughts on the card?
I didn't see the middle part, but it was otherwise a really good card. Like,
you
even
missed the best part, honestly.
I know. I'll pick it up tomorrow. But, you know, like, it's just one of those things where even the decisions were all good fights. Everybody, the winners all performed really well. Overeem performed well. Cejudo performed well. Hendricks performed well. And Jaychick performed well. It was good to see that everything working. And so it was fun. It was a well-booked card and ended up being a fun card to watch.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that this card has been so overshadowed by 184, which basically had Ronda Rousey and almost nothing else. And this is a much better card top to bottom, but it shows you that it's all about the headliners in this game, and Ronda Rousey is one of the biggest stars in the game. Anthony Pettis just is not, despite those of us who are rooting for him to do it, and he didn't.
No, we saw the traffic results all week. Anthony Pettis is not moving any numbers at all.
No, not at this point in time. And if he's going to turn it around, he's got his work cut out for him. So that's our show. Remember to give us a like on YouTube. Subscribe to MMAnation.com on YouTube, and you'll get all our videos. We'll have Knuckle Up and Care Don't Care and Vivisections for whatever. What is coming up next? Do you have any idea?
That Brazilian card with Maia LaFleur, is that it?
Yes, Demian Maia versus Ryan LaFleur in Brazil next Saturday, so March 21st. So, we'll be torturing ourselves with vivisections and the whole bit on that sucker. And Tom Grant will have Inside the Guard. Eugene Robinson will have a Knuckle Up on Monday. And so we'll be back. Give us a like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter at KidNate, at TheZaneSimon. Adios, MMA aficionados. Thanks, Zane.